Okay, devotees, we're right in the heart of Bhagavad Gita, having finished the ninth chapter. So now we're going on to the tenth chapter. Already Krishna described this, we read right at the end there, Krishna described some very intimate details about how he relates with his devotees. It's a very, very deep relationship which may be difficult to understand from the material point of view. But it's very, very, very intimate, very close, very affectionate dealings between Krishna and his devotees. And the process of devotional service is so powerful and so extraordinary that even if people, while they're trying to do some devotional service, even if their positions become compromised, but as long as they really try to stick in devotional service sincerely, Krishna will protect them and help them and make all arrangements. And Krishna said, very quickly they become righteous and then they attain lasting peace. So now in this chapter we'll find more along those lines. Actually, there's the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 10 verse 8, 9, 10 and 11. There's some very wonderful descriptions there in those four verses, particularly in verse 10 and verse 11. Krishna explains how he reciprocates with his devotees in very amazing ways. So that we'll find, that's the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, those verses. And then after that, from about verse 16, 17 onwards, then Krishna explains more about his opulences. I am this, I am that, and so on. That type of verse to inspire us. If we really feel, if we appreciate Krishna and get some idea of, at least some idea of the extent of his glories, that'll inspire us to surrender to him and serve him. So these types of things we'll find here in the 10th chapter. Okay, so the first part then is section A, is Krishna's position as the origin of everything. So let's have a look, see. Well, here in the first verse, Krishna tells Arjuna, listen again, as if, you know, as if Arjuna is not already listening. Arjuna is really listening, having heard these very dramatic ideas about dealing with devotees even when they get into big trouble, but how Krishna is still very merciful. So why then? Why does Krishna say, listen again? Because he is about to impart some more really, really important information which is just going to take the whole subject even deeper. So like this, he's giving emphasis, and he says, I'm going to give you knowledge that is better than what I've explained already. He makes an interesting point in verse 2, which is a theme which is there in one or two other verses just around this part. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. They don't really understand very clearly. And what reason does Krishna give? Because In every respect, I am the source of the demigods and the sages. It's kind of a little bit subtle point, really. But the basic idea is that because Krishna is the source and they are coming from Krishna, therefore, like constitutionally, it's very, very difficult for them to clearly understand Krishna because he is their source. It's very difficult for people to understand, like really understand their parents, because their parents, you know, for one thing they're kind of on a higher level, for another thing so much of the parents' life has already happened without the children having any experience of it. So the point is something like this, that these demigods and great sages cannot understand Krishna, or particularly Krishna's origin, because he is the source of them. Anyway, you can just consider that point, that, you know, that's meant to be the basic idea. Anyway, there in 2 Krishna said that they don't understand me, but then in verse 3 he says that anyone who does understand me, as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, he only this person who can really understand Krishna in these ways, as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, in all these ways which are to do with him being beyond all of us, including even the demigods and sages. Even though it seems improbable that anyone could understand because the demigods and sages don't understand, but anyone who does understand, only those people will be freed from all sins and will be able to go back to Godhead. Then verses 4 and 5, if you look at verses... yes.
How did Narada Muni fit into
Tetsu? Narada Muni fit into Tetsu. Well, he's not one of these people. He is a great devotee. See, the thing is, there are people who understand, but they're not the demigods and the great sages. They're the devotees. They're the only ones who understand. And how do they understand? Aha! Stay tuned. That is the point that Krishna is building up to. That is this very important point, which he says is like, you know, the greater than any knowledge I've given even so far. Okay, so 4 and 5 then. Krishna lists out a whole lot of qualities. Yeah, different things. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, right? Forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So what is the implication of that in terms of what we just said about the demigods and sages? See if you can get this one. It means, the implication is, that even by the cultivation of these qualities, you cannot understand Krishna. These are all created by him. Some are good things, some are not so good. But the idea is, these are material qualities created by Krishna. They will not help us understand Krishna and come to the level which is beyond these qualities, the transcendental level. Because these are all material things. Some of them are nice, some of them are not nice. The nice ones, if they're engaged in Krishna's service, in secondary types of ways they may help, but they can never be like the essence or the real reason why we might understand Krishna. Okay, then, verse 6. The seven great sages, and before them the four other great sages, and the Manus, come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. And so what is the implication of that? They also don't understand Krishna. The seven great sages, then there's some other great sages, then there's the Manus, then there's all the living beings. They don't understand Krishna. Krishna is widely not understood. You know, misunderstood, but generally not understood. This is Krishna. So now, we're going to start going into how people come to understand him. Yes. Very important. So, as a prelude to entering into this point, Krishna speaks verse 7. Let me just see where I am here. Krishna speaks verse 7. Right. Krishna speaks verse 7. Well, okay. As a prelude. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there's no doubt. In other words, when you do understand, not that you can understand Krishna completely, but when you do start to develop some nice understanding, then this has a great impact on you. It changes you and your life. As Krishna says here, such a person engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So the understanding of Krishna, one who's factually convinced of his opulence and mystic power, convinced who is Krishna, this understanding is very powerful and it has a very great effect on the hearer, on the person who understands. They become devotees, not only devotees, but they engage in unalloyed devotional service. Ananya Bhakti, that highest level of devotional service. So this knowledge about Krishna is really very, very important, to be able to understand Krishna nicely, because it becomes like an unstoppable stimulus for engaging in devotional service. Just as if anyone points a gun at you and says, give me all your money, it becomes like an almost unstoppable stimulus for you doing that. Something like that, isn't it? The power of persuasion. Yeah. So in a very natural and spontaneous way, when the devotees understand Krishna, or when people begin to understand Krishna more clearly, they become inspired to render service to him and become devotees. So this then brings us into the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, which is verses 8, 9, 10 and 11. Well, there in your overview book you've got the whole, all four of them. All four of them all wrapped up in one. This is Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. This is considered, well, interesting. This is interesting. The Vedic literatures are considered the essence of all knowledge. Amongst the Vedic literatures, Bhagavad Gita is considered the essence of the Vedic literatures. So in terms of knowledge in general, Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the essence, right? Then within Bhagavad Gita, these middle six chapters from 7 to 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So they are the essence of the essence of the essence of all knowledge. You couldn't really get much more essential than that. But in these middle six chapters, these four verses are considered the essence. How's that? Getting a bit amazing. So they are the essence of the essence of the essence of the essence, and that's it. Yeah. So these are really wonderful verses. So if we look at them, we see in verse 8, Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual and material wealth. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So Krishna's introducing himself, what is his position, and then how do the devotees respond, or people who understand his position sufficiently, how do they respond? They engage in devotional service and worship him with all their hearts. You know, it has a very deep effect, including emotionally, on them. So then to take it further, in verse 9, Krishna elaborates on what they do. How do they serve him? They engage in his devotional service and worship him with all their hearts. What do they do? The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So it becomes like their life, like their lives. It becomes like their food. Baladev Vijayabhushan says they cannot live without Krishna. If somehow they're separated from Krishna, or hearing about Krishna, they become like fish out of water. I hope none of you are fisher people, but you know what it's like for a fish when it's taken out of water. It's really, really bad. So the devotees, if they're not somehow or other not able to hear about Krishna, they feel like that. You know, this is not just some poetic idea, but this is very literal. Can you imagine having such an attachment for hearing about Krishna? You know, I mean, we're all here because we enjoy it to some degree, but not to that degree, is it? I don't really expect it. And he says, it is as if they become lusty to hear about me, just as people become attracted to the opposite sex and really start getting moved by that. So these pure devotees, they feel so strongly for it. So it's a very advanced level of devotional service. But if we practice sadhana bhakti, then gradually we can come to that level. So then, Lord Krishna speaks verses 10 and 11, which are very nice. We give class on these verses often. In these two verses, Krishna is describing how he reciprocates. You know, the first half of a verse was Krishna explaining what he is. He's God. The second half of the first verse and the second verse of these four, so one and a half verses, are talking about the devotees, how they serve Krishna and how absorbed they are. But then two verses are about how Krishna reciprocates. So the greater part then, 50%, is about the reciprocation of Krishna. In other words, Krishna is not ungrateful He's not just some big authority figure you have to serve, and you know that person barely acknowledges you or something like that. He feels deeply for his devotees, and he reciprocates in very amazing ways with his devotees. So here then in these two verses 10 and 11, Krishna explains the main way he reciprocates with his devotees. So as he says in 10, what is it? To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. This is Krishna's reciprocation. Now, some people might think, you know, is that really such a reciprocation? Give them understanding, give them some knowledge. Now, you could always buy a copy of Bhagavad Gita and get the knowledge. Wouldn't it be a greater reciprocation if Krishna gave them something more, like some money? Yeah, out of compassion for them, I dwelling within their hearts, give them millions of rand. That would be, you know, a real gift. But actually the fact is that the giving of this understanding is the greatest gift. Because through that understanding, the devotee appreciates why I should surrender to Krishna, why I should be a devotee, and then they do it, then they get into it. And through that understanding, they learn how to progress in Krishna consciousness and then go back to Godhead. Some people say, and you know, we've been asked so many times, that why, if Krishna really cared, why doesn't he just come down and just force us at gunpoint? You're coming back to Goloka Vrindavan. some people think that this would be real mercy, that even though we might not want to, but he would force us to because it's the best thing for us. But, you know, if we went back to Godhead, your average materialist in the street went back to Godhead, they would become like, they would stick out like proverbial sore thumbs. Because everyone there and everything there is fully absorbed in Krishna's devotional service. And now here comes Mr. you know, X off the streets of Johannesburg. You know, hey, where's the Nando? what do you mean you people are all vegetarian? Where can I get the newspaper? Where can I get some cigarettes? Where can I rent a Bollywood movie? All these types of things. What do you mean you're just going to serve Krishna? What about you? You're going to serve Krishna too? And what about you? You're going to serve Krishna too? Don't you do anything else around here? So, you know, if people, real, ordinary materialistic people were forced to go back there as they are, they would not fit. They themselves would be very unhappy. They would really be unhappy. And the other people there, the devotees, would also not be happy having these misfits, you know. And they, you never know, they might even try to form a political party. vote for me, for God. Who needs Krishna? So this understanding, which leads to this natural desire to serve Krishna and be a devotee, actually, this understanding is essential. It's absolutely essential to come to this point as Krishna said in the seventh verse, when people are factually convinced of who he is, what he is, like that, then they engage in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. Why? Because they're convinced. Because they want to. Because they know this is actually the best thing. Anything else is rubbish. I'm just going to do this. So happily they go back to Godhead. Yeah. So this is very important, this point, that Krishna gives the understanding. So now, in the purports of 10 and 11, there are some passages. Of course, it's all interesting, but Prabhupada, in the purport of verse 10, Prabhupada talks about the application of this understanding, of the giving of understanding. He talks about it in relation to the neophyte devotees in the last paragraph of the purport of text 10. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritualization, but still, if he's not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engages himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. And then a similar comment is there in the purport of verse 11. Let me just see where it is. Anyway, it's somewhere in the purport of verse 11. Let me just read it. But even if a devotee does not take advantage of the literatures of the previous acharyas or of his spiritual master, if he's sincere in devotional service, he is helped by Krishna himself within his heart. So the sincere devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness cannot be without knowledge. The only qualification is that one carry out devotional service in full Krishna consciousness. So that's actually the first paragraph, in fact. Prabhupada says that. So now, this is in regard to the neophyte devotees. If a devotee is maybe, Prabhupada says, not intelligent enough or does take advantage of the literatures or the spiritual master. But, you know, a devotee may be illiterate. We have illiterate devotees. A devotee may be geographically isolated. You know, there are different types of situations. Devotee may be deaf. We have deaf devotees too. So, for different reasons, the devotees may not have, you could say, the normal access that most of us have without too much difficulty. I went to a place called Yakutsk in northeastern Siberia, and the last time a disciple of Srila Prabhupada went there, which was the first time, was, you know, actually I forget frankly exactly when, but it was like several years ago. He stopped en route, in between flights, he stopped in the airport for an hour, and the devotees went out there and sat with him for half an hour. Yeah. So, you know, geographic isolation. Yeah, so somehow or other, certain devotees, there may be some obstacles, but still, Krishna will help if they're sincere. So there is no good excuse for getting into Maya or just, you know, not really being serious about Krishna consciousness, because Krishna will always make up the balance which may be lacking. Yeah. So that was in regard to the neophyte devotees. Then in the purport of verse 11, Prabhupada applies this understanding to the pure devotees. This is now, let's see. Boy, I'm having difficulty here finding. This is the last paragraph. Well, actually, from right in the middle of the page, you'll see it says right in the middle of the page there, only by devotional service is the Supreme Truth Krishna pleased, and by his inconceivable energy he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. This is now the advanced devotees. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart, and with the presence of Krishna, who's just like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. Due to the contamination of material association through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears, and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. The ultimate goal, Vishnu, can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service, and not by mental speculation or argument. The pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord, who's pleased by the loving devotional service of the devotee. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all materialistic endeavors. So, some very nice comments by Srila Prabhupada. Now what I'd like to do is read couple of excerpts from the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhushan to these two verses. First of all, verse 10. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Arjuna asks, they have priti. Priti means love. They have priti. So what is the need for buddhi yoga? What is the need for intelligence or knowledge like that? Krishna answers, to enter into their direct relationship with me. How can they achieve their personal relationship with you? Arjuna asks. Krishna says, I give them inspiration within their hearts. It doesn't come from within themselves or any other source. It comes only from me and can be accepted only by them. Then they come into my direct association. So this buddhi yoga is the inspiration. It is me. It is my personal association. And then Krishna speaks verse 11. He ties things in like this, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that out of compassion for them, I, dwelling within their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And then he says, that Krishna says, for these devotees I give, by my mercy, knowledge. I give it to no one but them. After they attain my mercy, I take charge of their knowledge. Their knowledge becomes my responsibility. Because I dispel their ignorance, There is no need for them to endeavor to do that. I care for them. Those fixed on me, my pure devotees, get my mercy, and I remove their darkness. I enter their hearts like a bee entering a lotus. Whatever traces of ignorance may still be there due to anadi karma, so much previous karma, I personally remove. For such ananya bhaktas, I maintain them and give them the intelligence to act properly. They need go nowhere else. Then I manifest my transcendental qualities and form for them. So then both Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vijayabhushan make the same comment, that these verses are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. They remove the distress of the living entity and grant peace to him. So now, Arjuna is very much affected by this. And so then from 12 to 18 or thereabouts, Arjuna is glorifying Krishna. In fact, it is really at this point that Arjuna is now convinced. You know, in the beginning, Arjuna was full of all sorts of doubts and so on. And so Krishna's been preaching and arguing and this way and that. But now that the discussion has come to this point, so Krishna has won. Yeah. The discussion, in a certain sense, the discussion has finished. And what is brought out from now on is more like embellishment and things like that. But the discussion in terms of Krishna trying to bring Arjuna around to the point of accepting and surrendering, it's happened. It's happened right now, at this point. So therefore, in verse 14, Arjuna says, "O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. I totally accept as truth." So at that point, that's it, really. That's it, in a sense. Let's see now. And Prabhupada says here that it's in the purport of text 14. It's the last four lines of the purport. The acceptance means this acceptance right now by Arjuna of all that Krishna says should be emulated. We all should do the same thing. Emulate means to just do the same thing. The acceptance by Arjuna of all that Krishna says should be emulated. Then we can understand the essence of Bhagavad Gita. And then only can we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Arjuna then goes on glorifying, and verse 16, he says, "Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences." Verse 17, "How should I think of you? In what forms are you to be remembered?" So again, the same idea from the seventh chapter and elsewhere. We've got to fix our minds. So, many, many ways to fix the mind. And they're all wonderful. They're just amazing. And Arjuna is so inspired. You know, "You are the taste of water. Wow, that's fantastic." And, you know, like this. All these things he's thinking, "Wow, this is great. Tell me more. I want to hear more." because they're all just so wonderful. It just, the whole thing just gets more wonderful. So he says in 18, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you. For the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that, Arjuna says, that my ears have become like tongues, and your words are like nectar, and I just want to drink it. Just pour it in. Just pour it in. So that's the mood. And then from verse 19 onwards, basically, well, from verse 20 really, Krishna, up till about verse, what is it, 40 or something like that, Krishna goes through all sorts of different examples. I am this, I am that, up to 39, and I don't propose to actually go through them all. Hope you don't mind. Not that it's the same old thing, but you know, it's just different examples of the opulences of Krishna. Having done that, in verse 40, we're just jumping right to the end of the chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, there's no end to this. There's no end to it. What I've spoken to you is just a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. What need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed information? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So, you know, it would be a really good idea to surrender to Krishna. Just an excellent idea. Stop worrying about all the petty little things and just surrender to Krishna. Just take shelter under Krishna's lotus feet. And, you know, what to speak of being better than everything else put together. It's just in another league. Completely. Really wonderful. So like this, we conclude the 10th chapter.